Welcome to the Minimum Effective Dose Podcast, where we discuss the art, science, and application of high-performance strength and conditioning. Join Mike Perry and Brett Jones as they share invaluable experiences veteran strength coaches, lecturers, and educators. Welcome to Season 4 of the Minimum Effective Dose Podcast. Welcome back to the Minimum Effective Dose Podcast. My name is Mike Perry, and I am here, as always, with my good buddy, Brett Jones. Brett, what's up, man? What's going on these days out in the burg?
Large and in charge, man. Just, I like it. You know, hopefully the prognosticating rodent was correct, and we get our early spring, and we can not deal with winter anymore. But yeah, just busy work.
Show me your PubMed article on Punxsutawney Phil, mister, because if you don't have the research to prove it, it's not true.
According to what I read or saw around Groundhog's Day, the prognosticating rodent is not that accurate.
Who knew
that trusting a rodent to see his or her shadow.
Punxsutawney Phil. So I imagine it's a male.
Not always.
But not always, really?
Not always.
Oh, I didn't know that. So I learned more about groundhogs today than I knew 10 seconds ago.
Fantastic. You can actually go to Punxsutawney and visit the Punxsutawney Phil family at like the library or whatever it is. And they have like this external glass thing. You can walk up and visit the groundhogs who are practicing their prognostication behind the glass.
Like it's almost like the same thing every day.
It's weird. It's kind of like my life.
This is already going off the rails.
Work, train, eat, sleep, repeat.
Okay.
Ned Flanders?
We are not talking about rodents. although we already did, so that's just a lie. We're gonna talk about putting together all the different training modalities and load management and how to make it all work. Because one of the things that we've gotten asked so many times in the Strong First community, but in general, people do this is, hey, I want to combine my kettlebells with my barbells or my body weight with this, or how can I incorporate running programs, or how should I train for a marathon, a powerlifting meet, and a chili cook-off at the same time? So those are the things that we see quite a bit. And there is a methodology to put it all together, but there's a ton of mistakes people make along the way. So we're going to dive right in. So Brett, what do you think the biggest reason is people are asking like how to put this stuff together?
Well, everybody wants everything and we want it now. And so, you know, and we've seen this a bunch of times over the years. Anybody comes out with a program, the first question asked is, well, how do I combine this with that and this with that? And so, you know, if we break it down, you know, when I look at a program, you know, I'm looking at what are the neurological, mechanical, and metabolic adaptations that I'm looking for when I do that program. Now that helps because now I can start balancing the stress of one program against the other. And so I come back to, you know, strength is the base. So we know we're going to be doing some type of strength training. What that looks like can be different, right? Maybe I am focused more on body weight. Maybe it is trying to get my half body weight press for my SFG2. Maybe I'm also concerned with keeping my snatch test because I've got a recert coming up. Or I just have an event coming up like a 5K or a 10K or a bike, whatever. So now I've got a ballpark it as cardiovascular or metabolic goal. I've got a neurological and mechanical goal in the strength work. And so how do I put those things together? You know, we end up with people that are trying to, you know, research for an SFL and maybe get their barbell military press and their snatch test, and they're trying to get ready for level two and get their half body weight military press. Like there's a lot of things going on there. So balancing those things out, and what you end up doing is your half hour, 45 minute program becomes 2 hours. And now you're trying to figure out how to fit in all those sessions, and your weekly load, your cup runneth over, and you end up either overtrained or with a tweak or an injury or something going on. So like the idea of combining things, we have to talk about it. In an ideal world, we would just focus on one thing at a time. Haven't seen that ideal world yet, but I'm still hoping it shows up one day. So,
yeah. Well, you know, I think it really does come down to the goal. And like you said, like everybody wants everything and there's no way to program for it all. Now, can it be done if you, you know, have the means to dedicate pretty much your entire day towards exercise, recovery, everything else? Yeah, it can be done. But also there's a significant investment of time if you want to be able to do that. I mean, it's even just thinking about training for a marathon, right? You can't like shortcut the volume, right? You have to accrue those hours, and it literally is hours and miles throughout the week. So that's just something that takes a lot of time. So if you are trying to prepare for a marathon and you want to do powerlifting, right? I mean, can it be done? 100%. But one of those will most likely suffer. And that's what you have to really consider whenever you're looking at a program. It's like, what is your main goal? And then your secondary and tertiary goal. Now understand, the more goals you have, the less you're going to be able to optimize sort of the big ones, right? Because if you want to be, you know, if you want to put on 15 pounds of muscle and have 3% body fat, it's like, it's really hard to do both. So you have to think of it as sort of a hierarchy. And then from there, you have to, you know, you have to put the programs together in a complementary fashion that is going to, you know, result towards those adaptations over time, but not particularly smoke people. And that is the art and science of programming. That's where it all just comes together, because pretty much everybody these days is doing, you know, what you can call it, concurrent periodization or whatever you want. But because, with the exception of pro sports, but with high school and even collegiate, there's multi-sport athletes, there really isn't an off season. So you have to understand how to manage those loads and maintain multiple qualities at once, but also understand that in certain points of the season, those qualities are going to change, kind of like the notches on an equalizer, because there's certain parts of the year that you can focus more on aerobic, you know, capacity or this and that. So a really, really well thought out program isn't just about sets and reps. It's really thinking about the entire picture.
Absolutely. And if you want to do everything, you only get to do a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
And you have to believe in carryover. You have to believe you can do one thing and get three things, which is one of the powers of kettlebell ballistics. I know that if I have good swing, snatch, or jerk programming in my routine, I'm checking cardiovascular, metabolic adaptations, conditioning, to put it under the big umbrella. I know I can accomplish that stuff, and my power training. And it's a weird hybrid. Now, if I'm working with a rotational athlete, will I still have med ball throws and other, you know, power activities in there? If I'm training athletes, I'm going to have some flying 10s, flying 20s. Am I going to do some leaping and bounding, especially if those are athletes that don't do that a lot in their practice? Yes. But we both know you don't need to do a whole lot of those to get a whole lot of benefit from them. I know in 50 to 100 swings or snatches, I can get a really good metabolic or conditioning adaptations. The strength work, you know, the base there is low rep, low volume, high quality work. So it's possible to put it all together, but you just have to know that you can do one thing, get three things. Carryover is a real thing. And you don't have to do, quote, everything.
Yeah. And you know, and to that point, swinging a kettlebell, and we know that it's definitely a skill, but I think what people do in kettlebell training is they always view kettlebell training as this, like, this sort of 75-80% muscle endurance continuum, right? Where it's just this sort of constant hum cadence all the time. And when you look at really the true ways to get the adaptations via kettlebell training, there needs to be gears. you need to understand physiology, you need to understand recovery, effort. I mean, there's a lot that goes into it. And I guess the point that I'm trying to make is, you know, a big part of the programming is understanding the gears and the intensity within that training session, right? Because if you're doing speed work, right, that is going to be a very, very high gear, right? And you have to make sure that you know what's going on for the rest of the training session and vice versa, right? So I think layering things and understanding that every decision that you make in the program will in some way, shape, or form impact everything else.
Definitely. So if you launch into your training routine and do your 100 swings and then think you're going to go have some really high quality sprinting, no.
Yeah.
I would argue.
Your point though, I actually want to say though, if you got, you know, a medium sized bell anywhere from like a 24 to a 28 and you did, you know, 5 explosive swings every 30 to 45 seconds for 3 to 5 minutes, and you really, really were popping with those, that would be a perfect little neurological primer to get things going. And then I wouldn't say go out and do a sprint. I would do a couple buildups to get some specificity within the patterning and then go from there. So that's that whole carryover Brett was talking about too. It's like, it's the carryover. Yes, you're going to get the physical qualities of, you know, the ability to have better muscle endurance. That's great. But from a neurological standpoint, there's that carryover, which is the part that is like you said, it's like kettlebells checks the boxes for a lot of those. And that's why it's so important to understand sets, reps, intensity, effort, because you just don't want every swing session to be the same cadence, speed, weight.
Well, and to your point there with a moderate load for low reps with reasonable rest as a primer for a short dose. Yeah, that's, you know, he didn't say take a 48 kilo and knock out, you know, sets of 10 within 5 minutes, do your 100 reps within 5 minutes, and then think you're going to go, you know, hit some high quality sprinting. It's a moderate load. The sets are very stimulatory. Actually, one of the ways we used to warm up for a max military press attempt were a few heavier snatches.
Yeah.
As a way to prime the system for the heavier military press load. So there's definitely all the different adaptations. And I think the confusing thing is for people is because we do try to combine things and do everything at once, the messages get muddled. And, you know, I've tried to provide a little bit of clarity on some of the Strong First newsletters and things like that. I'll be talking about it tomorrow in the Certified Instructor Only webinar. Cadence matters a lot. Oh, yeah. Steps per minute, reps per minute. If we were talking music, that's not, cadence doesn't equal steps per minute in music. But for exercise, we consider cadence to be steps. Beats per minute is what we'd be talking about in music, but that's not referred to as cadence in music. Anyway, just a little side tangent that there's different ways to look at this stuff. So if I'm doing a heavier axe session where I'm doing my 5 reps at the top of the minute, 4 reps, 6 reps, whatever the case may be, my cadence on those is actually pretty low. I want each rep to have its moment. I want a little micro rest during the float, so that I'm actually recovering a little bit within the set. But if I'm doing quick in the dead snatches, I'm really high cadence. I'm almost an illegal lockout where I'm ripping it down as soon as it got to the top. And that higher cadence has a completely different effect.
Yeah.
And so the, you know, problem is somebody goes into something like quick in the dead at a low cadence or not producing high power, and you're not going to get the adaptations that you think you are. Mm-hmm. Somebody goes into an axe session and they're trying to knock out those 5 swings as quick as they can. Not the idea. So that the cadence really matters. So understanding how you're going to execute something, and put it together is always important. And we've talked about this before in just as far as how you structure a session. You have your warm up or movement prep. You usually go into some sort of speed or power work, whatever your focus is going to be for that session, strength work. And then you're going to do your quote conditioning or metabolic work at the end. So that still holds. And how do you, I guess the end point, how do you know you're doing too much? We're always trying to figure out how to recover. Like, yeah. you know, you're beat down, so your solution is an ice bath or a supplement or a red light or a, you know, whatever the case may be. So instead of thinking, huh, maybe I'm just doing it a little too much, you start looking elsewhere for solutions. So
yeah, I think, and fatigue is not something to chase. And here's why. We were doing a podcast the other day with Eric, and we had Dr. Christopher Ahmad, who's the chief ortho for the Yankees. And he was, you know, we were having a conversation about sort of load management, and we were having a conversation about injuries in general. And he had some like really interesting information on it. When it comes out, we'll have to link it. But, you know, he was basically saying that, and I wish I could explain it in the same fashion, but he was basically saying that like the biggest issue is pretty much load management at this point. That everything is just the fact that people are not recovering, and they don't understand the difference between like soreness and pain, and also the neurological recovery component of things, right? Because, you know, baseball players, they're not going to rest. And he was saying this, he's like, they're not going to rest until they get a little bit of medial elbow pain or a little bit of anterior shoulder pain where the labrum is, right? So it's like, you need to, if you even start to feel something, he even said, he goes, I want those sort of stress signs on the elbow or on the shoulder to be considered almost the same as like chest pain for an adult. Like for a young kid, if you've got a young kid with, you know, medial elbow pain or anterior shoulder pain, he's like, that is not good. That is not what we're looking for. And the problem, I think, you know, with the kid thing, just quick, is some of us are too durable. Some of us can get away with beating ourselves up for a very, very long time. And then they realize later down the road that what they did was just dumb. And I don't know who said it at one point, but it was probably Coach Boyle, because it was just really good life advice. It's like, well, how do you know if you actually were really good at your job as a strength and conditioning coach? And it's like, hey, if you work with someone and down the road, they're still healthy. They maybe they had a good career or whatever, but they enjoy training and they still have you know, a functioning body, and they were able to do what they wanted to do physically. So, but it's definitely an interesting way to look at it with all of the different warning signs and all the different ways to look at stress and adaptation. And yeah, it's just, people are going a little crazy with this stuff.
And the strong first stop signs, you know, the way that we're supposed to manage our training, they're too easy to ignore. And I was laughing because I was the moderator for one of the events, and Pavel would pull somebody up to demonstrate something, and then he's stopping them. You know, nope, we're going to go to this because you're starting to slow down on your tempo changed, your rep speed changed. Like, and those are two different things, right? Your tempo, if you're clicking off a rep every 2 seconds, and then that becomes every 2.2 and every 2.3 and every 2.5, your tempo is changing. Mm-hmm. Versus your rep speed, which is the within the rep. So there are various things to look at here. And so the hardest thing in the world is to convince somebody that you've done enough, that it's time to take a break. And I think this is actually one of the areas where interleaving the practice can really be successful, because actually one of my new favorite iron cardio variations, which I came up with during Simple and Sinister February, was do a sequence on one side, clean press squat, take a break, 5 swings, do a sequence on the other side, rest, 5 swings, and just kind of keep going back and forth. Man, my presses are stronger. You know, I'm able to use a heavier load and get more done in my iron cardio. And when I look at it, instead of trying to do 40 straight sets of iron cardio, I'm doing 20 sets of iron cardio interspersed with the swings. And so my load management on overhead work and how heavy a bell I'm pressing is better managed, because now I'm forced to extend my rest periods, to not be pressing set after set after set. And so the load management piece and interleaving the practice can be pretty successful. And it's being willing to listen to the warning signs. I think one of the things is we just don't feel like we're being tough enough. If we don't ignore the first sign, we fear that we're not being tough enough. And that's, I think there are safe ways. I've always looked at battling ropes this way. Sleds can be another one where you can push a little bit into a little bit of fatigue and find that point of, where do I need to actually push a little bit more and where do I need to stop? There are safe ways to venture into those things. I don't think swings are it. I don't think snatches are it. I don't think presses or deadlifts are where you push into those areas to the point of a major league baseball player or a special operator in the military. It's a multi-million-dollar smart weapon.
Yeah.
If that multi-million-dollar smart weapon cannot go on a mission, that's a problem because there's been a huge investment for that $10 million a year baseball player who now has to sit out for five games because they ignored the owie elbow. That's a problem. So yeah, I think we have the doing less is such a hard message.
Well, it's hard because it's like telling the kid to not touch the stove, right? Usually people will start doing less once they've jacked themselves up or something significant has happened. It's kind of the same message we talk about, honestly, like with taking care of your body and cancer. It's like, don't wait until the big stuff happens to make a change. It's kind of like the same thing with programming, right? Like, don't wait for the vehicle to go off the road until you're like, yeah, maybe you should change things. Why? Well, like, I have shoulder and neck pain. It's like, well, maybe that should have been a warning sign. And it's not a badge of honor, right? Like, And look, I'm not saying you shouldn't go push yourself physically. I think it's a good thing to do. But like, if you want to push yourself physically, cool, just do it a little bit smarter. And there are ways to get in really damn good shape without beating the shit out of yourself. Like, I know it looks cool to like show your ripped up hands after you've done a bunch of crappy snatches and, kipping pull-ups. But like, there's better ways. There really is. I mean, look, I've been working with some of the best fighters in the world for the last decade. And I'm going to be honest, very few of them use swings. Very few of them use snatches because I have found that through the wear and tear of what fighters go through, there are different modalities that will do the job, but is easier on their body. And at the end of the day, that is our job as a strength and conditioning coach, is to help our clients reach their goals, but keep them as safe as can be along the way.
Absolutely. So circling back on the general concept of load management and how do we combine programs? A couple of key concepts. Do less than you think you should be doing. It's like getting a haircut. Not that Mike or I would know anything about the quality of getting a haircut. But if you take too much off on the first pass, you end up looking like Mike or I, where we're kind of bald. If you take a little bit off on the first pass, you can always shape it up and take a little more off in the second pass. If we treated programming a little bit more like that, I've challenged people for years because when most people think of programming, they think, how much can I do and still recover? Well, flip the script. What's the least amount you need to do to make progress?
The minimum effective dose.
Yes, it's like we knew that when we created the name for the podcast.
Something.
So tiptoe in. Do a little bit. See how it goes. Add a little bit. See how it goes. And not every session. Add a little bit and go several sessions. Add a little bit and go several sessions. So if we approached training from that minimum effective dose standpoint, if we did as little as we needed to do to make progress, and then we add a little bit as we adapt, that's how I've ended up where I am with iron cardio. I started out with 15, 20 sets at a pretty low load with pretty generous rest periods. And now I'm to the point where I can push through some pretty good volume, some pretty good work, but it's because I've built into it progressively over time. Have I made mistakes? Sure. I still touch the hot stove every now and then. Take a few days off, back down on my volume, back down on my load. But yeah, I think that, you know, if we flip the script there a little bit, we start having some better conversations, better results.
Yeah. And when it comes to the idea of the minimum effective dose and minimalism in general, we're not talking about lazy programming. We're not talking about just doing one or two things because that's all you want to do. We're talking about putting together a program that is efficient and appropriate that will allow you to reach your goals in the most efficient way possible. And efficiency can be time. It could be whatever it wants to be. But the point is it's, you know, if two Advil is going to take care of the headache, you don't need three, but you start with two. And that's exactly what Brett's saying. So I think it's just, I think we're so eager to make progress that we want to push, but we forget about the long game. And you know, I've been in this a long time. So have you. It's you know, we make our living on telling people that the long game's important, right? And that's the best way to do stuff. But I mean, you got to go easy, and you just have to really step back and think about the big picture, right? I mean, we exercise to keep us healthy, not to hurt us. And if you are doing things that are getting you to the point where you're hurting or you're sore all the time, then it's time to take a good hard look at your programming.
Adam Pierre, Strong First instructor, has said something that I am absolutely stealing, that fitness should serve your life.
Mm-hmm.
Your life should not serve your fitness. And there's so many times where we flip that. But if fitness serves your life, you're able to go do all the things that you want to do. You're healthy. You're not sick all the time. You're not injured. You're not constantly dealing with something. It is a better way to approach your training, and it's just a tough, everybody wants to be fit yesterday. Everybody wants to do everything. Every new program that comes out, they want to combine it with the three other programs that they're already trying to make work. Mm-hmm. I think one of the reasons that I have been successful in my training in the last 3.5 years post-cancer is I've been doing one thing for 3.5 years. I've been doing iron cardio, and then I add some swings or snatches. And Simple and Sinister February was very interesting to me. And it's not just about me. There are other people that were doing this as well and had similar experiences. I hadn't been training every day. I trained 26 out of 29 days. I had not been doing 6, 7, 8 days of training in a row. And initially I was like, man, I don't know if I'm going to be able to keep doing this. I just didn't know if I could handle the daily stress. Mm-hmm. What I ended up doing was I was forced to really get smart with how I was rotating my intensity. So I would do an iron cardio session where I was doing the combo that I talked about with a 36 or a 40 kilo, or maybe alternating weights, 36 and 40. That's a pretty good load for me. But then I was doing my 5 swings, and I accomplished my swings over time. Then the next day, I'd come back with a 32 kilo, 2-arm swing for sets of 5 top of the minute for 20 minutes, and then do a get up at the top of the minute for 10 minutes. It's a 30-minute session. It's easy. Mm-hmm. And it allowed me to keep backing up training days by choosing intelligent variations and easy variations to keep the training moving forward and to be consistent. And if I nowadays, I had a 60 set session the other day, and I did some snatches the next day, and I've missed the last 2 days, and I'm okay with that because I did a lot of work and then backed it up with some good snatches, quick and the dead style. I'm tired of doing swings for right now. I think I'm going to focus on snatches for a little bit. And then, you know, I'll pick another variation for tomorrow morning. So, instead of trying to do everything, I focus on a couple of things. If you want to train consistently, you're going to have easy days. You're going to have light days. And you'll know if you're doing too much because it's not going to feel good. You're not going to feel recovered. Your tempo will be down. Your rep speed will be down. Your power will be down. You know, all of those things will happen. So if you're going to add something, add one thing, not five. And start with less than you think.
Yeah, definitely don't. You know, what's the old saying? If you're going to eat an elephant, start with one bite at a time, right? I mean, it makes a
100%.
ton of sense. And I mean, that's a pretty good motto for, you know, starting anything, right? Just chip away at it, and you know, and then eventually you'll get there. But it's consistency, right? It's the journey. And you know, I think also, we always talk about this, but you got to enjoy it, right? It has to be fun. You got to, and I'm not saying every day is going to be, you know, a roller coaster ride that is just filled with cotton candy and hugs, but like, there's going to be days you don't want to train. But look, at the end of the day, like, you gotta enjoy what you're doing, or at least enjoy a lot of the benefits of what you're doing, because that's a big part of it for some people as well. So, you know, you can't chase two masters. And I think if you do want to achieve multiple goals, you have to be patient, but you also have to be really smart. And that's when, you know, understanding wave loading and understanding stress and adaptation and how the body recovers is super important. Because I don't know who said it, it might have been even Riff, you know, it's better to step off a cliff than fall. But you know, if you can plan, it's better to plan a rest day than to be like, my body is absolutely destroyed, I need a rest day, right? Like, your body's screaming at you. Plan the rest day, enjoy that rest day. It doesn't mean that you're not gonna get fit. If anything, it's probably gonna be the best damn thing for you, is just to get out of the gym and give your body and your mind an opportunity. But you know, wave loading is where it's at, and understanding that stress and adaptation model is really key, because what that will do is that will allow you to make progress over time. Now, is it gonna be fast, immediate progress? No. But it will be consistent over time. And especially if you work with athletes that are in season, keeping them healthy is the name of the game.
Yeah, only in business school is there continual uphill progress. This is where step loading, I think, again, becomes a fabulous thing to look at, because you're going to make an increase and then you're going to stay there for an extended period of time.
Yeah.
And staying there for an extended period of time and making sure that you adapt and solidify those progressions are probably the biggest mistake that we make. We think because we made this 10-pound jump, 20-pound jump, added 30 reps, whatever the case may be, and that went okay for this day. You know, I made the point. I got into a little bit of an online thing where somebody was had posted a video of really horrific form, and said, "Who has a problem with this?" And I'm like, "Well, I didn't say this in the thread. I was taking a different tact, but you know, you should have a problem with this. This is not good." And basically, the response was, "Well, nothing bad happened, so it's okay." I'm like, "Well, that's like saying I went for a drive and didn't have my seatbelt on, so seatbelts are no, and I got home okay, so
Yeah.
seatbelts are fine." I mean, drunk drivers do this all the time, right?
I was just going to say, it's like, I just drank a bottle of vodka and I made it home. I'm good. Tomorrow I'm going to have go with a little bit more.
Yeah, apparently
Like,
drunk driving is
really?
not a bad thing.
Yeah,
No,
that's the dumbest argument on the freaking planet.
that's survivorship bias, right?
Yeah.
Nothing bad happened this time, so it must be okay. And when you dig in and research survivorship bias a little bit, you'll see that the mistake they were making was, you know, looking at the bullet holes and thinking, you know, that's where we need to put the extra armor. It's like, well, no, these are the ones that made it back. This we need to, yeah, the ones that didn't make it back probably have bullet holes in different places. So, you know, just because nothing bad happened this time, that could be a load management thing, right?
Yeah.
Where you add load for a session, nothing bad happens. That doesn't mean that you can sustain that load over an extended period of time. You may have just it was okay for one or two sessions. It's not okay for the third session. So this is, you know, all of these things are ongoing conversations where we're constantly evaluating what we're doing and making adjustments, because no plan survives contact with the enemy. And so I think the biggest thing is we look at where people are. And I know people do this with my training, for example, where I'm using the 36 and the 40 kilo for my iron cardio and accomplishing some pretty good workloads. That took 3 years. That took 3.5 years. I didn't start there. I started at the 24 kilo. And so, you know, don't look at where somebody is now after maybe, you know, a few good years of training. And I had a good base of training behind me prior to that. So yeah, start where you are. I think that's another big, big, big lesson with the load management and programming and trying to combine things. And specific to combining programs, is what you're about to add actually going to enhance what you're doing? Is it a new goal? Is it something that you actually need to be training, or are you just bored and you saw something shiny and decided you'd mix it with five other things?
Yeah. And to your point though, like if you are bored and you see some stuff, cool, just play around. Like it doesn't have to be in your program. Just have a fun experimental day. I mean, I remember early on with kettlebells, like, you know, when I was like messing around with kettlebell juggling, like it was just something different. It was, you know, I don't teach it and I don't really do it, but it was just something that was fun. So like, I think the other thing is don't be afraid to look at something new and just see how you do with it. And just learn about it before throwing it into a freaking program, because I think that's what people do. They prematurely see something and then they're like, this is the greatest thing in the world, but they haven't actually seen the short-term, medium, and long-term effects of that thing. So we just gotta, you know, I think coaches, the best thing you can do is if you want to implement something, you see a new exercise, just do it. And be, you know, as Ted Lasso would say, be curious, not judgmental, right? I mean, just go do it and spend some time with it and learn from it and figure out, is that really dumb? Or is that maybe there's something there? Or maybe there's a combination of both. Maybe there's some aspects of it that you love and other aspects you're like, yeah, I would never do that. It's okay. But my point is don't just steal stuff and throw it into a program and hope it goes well. Like, you know, use your brain a little bit.
So we'll kind of close with this, because in the Strong Endurance Express course, Pavel, when he gets to talking about planning and programming and things like that, there's a NASA axiom, and you know, NASA trains astronauts that have to be pretty dialed in and ready to take on some very stressful situations. So the NASA axiom is that ideal training involves changing just one of many variables until that variable reaches a constant. Then you change another and then another until you reach your goal. So let me read that one more time. From Pavel's Strong Endurance Express, the NASA axiom: ideal training involves changing just one of many variables until that variable reaches a constant. Then you change another and another until you reach your goal. That mindset on training and progression would save a lot of people a lot of pain. Because one variable, till it reaches a constant, then identify the next variable until that reach, and so on and so on. And too often we change three or four variables at once. We don't wait for them to reach a constant. We think because we went from 4 to 6 reps that we should go to 8. And if I did 8, I should go to 10. No, you should go from 4 to 6 and stay there until that stabilizes. Get that RPE drop. Step loading, wave loading, like all of these things play in. And I think a lot of people for load management and for combining programs, one variable, change one thing. I know where I get into trouble with my students in my own training is I change more than one variable. I try to change two or three things at once and I got problems. So
yeah. And to your point, I mean, when it comes to changing movement, you know, with, you can call it corrective exercise or whatever, but same thing, you know, if you're going to make a change, do it once, see if it worked. You know, there's something to be said, but you have to know what you're looking for, right? And you have to know what that one thing is. That isn't just like a random thing, right? There's an educated guess through the evaluation process, questioning, blah, blah, blah. So like the one thing has to be important, right? It should be a decision that you feel is gonna make a significant difference. It's not like, well, maybe if I go from the green mini band to the blue, it's gonna change everything, right?
100%.
So, but point being, it's decision-making is a big part of programming. And the better we are at stepping back and looking how to make better decisions for the long run, that's the sweet spot. That's exactly what we're looking to do. So Brett, Words of wisdom on this wonderful Friday. What do you got for us, buddy? Close us out.
One thing at a time. And do less than you think you need to. You can always add more. Just take away till you get down to the least you can do and make progress. You'll be surprised where you can take yourself. I never considered myself somebody that was a high volume trainee. I can get 240, 300 reps in a session. I can train every day if I want to, if I manipulate my variables intelligently. I've accomplished things that I never thought I would get back to, or some decent levels, because I've been smart about what I've been doing, and I've been willing to do less and do, I keep going back to conversation I had online where people were like, well, what's your favorite recovery strategy? Proper programming. Mm-hmm. I don't need a recovery strategy.
That and barbecue.
Food. Tasty food is definitely a huge recovery strategy. I think that combining programs, make sure the new program is going to serve your goals and where you want to be. And it's okay to change programs without trying to combine three things. And then the NASA axiom will serve people well.
Absolutely. Well, another one in the books, Brett. As always, appreciate you, buddy. For those of you that are listening, do us a huge favor and please give us a positive review on whatever platform you're listening to. And we will see you. Hey, everybody. Coach Mike here. Thank you so much for your support. We truly appreciate it. If you could do us a huge favor, please give us a positive review on whatever platform you're listening to. And also, please share this with your friends, colleagues, teammates, and fitness enthusiasts. Thank you again for supporting the Minimum Effective Dose podcast.